Congratulations on a great, great winner. Congratulations on a great team commitment week. I haven't seen many teams do what you guys just did just now. Pretty damn impressive. Don't ruin it this week. Carry it over into spring football. Keep accelerating. We'll see what happens. Everybody on the same page?
Yes, sir.
Thank you all for your work ethic. Thank you all for making this a fun 8 weeks for the coaching staff. Okay, you guys have bought into a lot of things that we're asking you to do. Just take another step. Enjoy your week off. Let's get to work when we come back. Let's go.
Let's go, boys.
Bring it up. Hey, understand that we will be the toughest, hardest working, most competitive team in the country. We all memorize that for a reason. Every team, when they play us, will understand we worked harder than that. One better on three. 1, 2, 3.
One better.
Welcome to the Go Big Redcast, the Husker Fan Sports Show.
Welcome to the Go Big Redcast. I'm your host, David Gaspers, and I'm with Honky.
Got my black shirt hat on. Ready to take a look at the Husker defense tonight. Go Big Red.
That's it?
That's it.
That's the shortest hot take Honky has ever had, folks. let's throw to Redcast Rob. I'm sure he'll take up some time.
Well, first, I'd just like to congratulate the Nebraska basketball team on their NIT berth. I'm really looking forward to
that. No, that didn't happen, Rob.
Well, at least we have some beautiful weather in Lincoln this week. There's going to be Husker baseball in the Haymarket. Screw it.
Also with Boomer.
Well, I know people are upset about not making the NIT, but, you know, really, if it's too good for scrub programs like North Carolina, we're better than that. Yeah, so.
Who would have thought Nebraska and UNC don't make it this year? That's crazy. Both? That's nuts.
What are the odds?
I'm going to have to root for Creighton.
Dave, no.
They're coming to Denver on Friday.
I know. We'll have plenty of Blue Jay fans
we
here.
We will be together.
Be like, oh, this feels like Omaha. Yeah,
we will be together on Friday watching. So that would be,
That's right. I'm looking forward to the Honky's trip out, his annual March Madness trip to Denver. Rob's coming down. We've got a good group of guys going out on Friday, I think. Maybe some on Thursday as well. So it should be a blast, Honk.
Yeah. This will be a fun week. It's spring break on campus, and so the team gets a week off, and kind of the Redcast a little bit gets a week off too. I mean, this is right now the only show scheduled for the week, at least. I don't think we have any other ones that we're going to pop up.
You don't have three fan forums scheduled?
Fan forums this week. I still have one other episode that I'm trying to get scheduled, and it's just a scheduling thing. So it may pop up quickly, but we'll hold off on that until we get the exact.
Honky is like the James Brown of Nebraska podcasting. There's a lot of podcasts out there about Nebraska football, but you're the hardest working podcaster we got.
Well, I appreciate that. It's fun talking to all the fans. The fan forums have been a great time, and we've got a bunch more of those planned. In fact, Dave, I guess you're setting me up here, but might as well go through them. We've got Connor Hayden coming up here on Wednesday, March 22nd, so next week. Coming back after spring ball. He has the number one football talk show on YouTube, Corn Crazed. Great show if you haven't seen that, Redcasters. Next up after that, Wednesday, March 29th at 8 o'clock, Redcast Sarah, the official mom of Husker Twitter. So that'll be a fun one. After that, Monday, April 3rd at 2 p.m., Throwing the Bones again with Adam Carriker, host of Carriker Chronicles, Carriker Live. That'll be a lot of fun to have another former Husker. We just had Cody Glenn on. And we've had Rob Zaska on it. Now we'll have Carrick here. And then last but not least, Wednesday, April 5th at 9 p.m., we'll have Brandon Kavanaugh, and he's the Huskers college football analyst with Athlon Sports. In addition to that, always, we're going to keep pushing this, the new Redcast store. In fact, I just had somebody tweet us out. They took a photo with one of our koozies they got on the store, and they were up in the mountains, I think, probably in Colorado there. So use the QR code there, Redcasters. We've got shirts and sweatshirts and koozies and all that good stuff. And last but not least, speaking of good stuff, Alumni Hall, two Lincoln locations, downtown 11th and P, and then South Point Pavilions by Barnes & Noble. That is a place, I mean, I just got a flag there. I've got a couple of hats from there this offseason so far. And with spring game coming up, great place to go down and get your Husker shopping in.
Yeah, Honk, you know, you might want to pick up some extra layers for your trip out here to Denver. On Wednesday, it's 69, and then you get here, and Thursday, it's supposed to snow. So it's very similar, you know.
Well, I've got my Husker schmock, so, I mean, I can
the schmock, yes.
I can wear that on Wednesday at least, and then we'll figure out what to do after that.
It's a beautiful
with schmock. With your dress trunks, right? I want
that's right.
Swim trunks and the smock, yeah. I think yes. That's the ticket. All right, guys. Well, let's we're talking defense, but before we do that, let's get to some tweets of the week.
All right. Well, the first tweet of the week here, and we're going to just start in some Nebraska ball, and this will pretty much be the Nebraska ball segment. Will be these two items here, but the first one today, Millard North alum St. Thomas, he entered into the transfer portal, and I don't know any information about him specifically. This isn't necessarily about him. It's more about the point of what Fred did last offseason, bringing Griesel in. I think that that's something that it would be great to see if we can go out and get another Nebraska kid, whether it's him. We've heard a lot about Chucky Hepburn. You know, there's rumor mill things with him in Wisconsin. Imagine that, because I think it's really important that we're going to have to hit the portal. We're going to have some success in recruiting here for whatever kind of success we're looking for next year. But Dave, I think this is where I really wanted to go to, was the poll that we had last week and have some discussion as a group. We said with whether an NIT invite comes or not, there was no doubt progress was made on the court this season with Coach Hoiberg's team. Moving forward, what are your expectations for Nebraska ball next season? Discuss. And with almost 1,200 votes, we had 27% say no expectations, 36% said NIT, and then 35% said NCAA. So almost exactly split there equally between NIT and NCAA. Dave, I'll just start with you. What are your thoughts there?
That's an intriguing poll. I don't know if that's statistically valid or not, but it does show you that Nebraska's fans are split on expectations. The no expectations is those are just fans that press don't pay attention, I guess. I don't know. And the NIT NCAA thing, there's a difference between expecting a NCAA bid and then is wanting it or expecting to at least be in the discussion for it, right? There's a lot of things that could play out there where you don't get an NCAA bid, but you're really happy with a really good season. You feel like you got jobbed, right? Like Rutgers this year, I guess, yeah. Right? Obviously the alternative. So, I mean, I feel like even though I was somewhat, generous with my support this year with Hoiberg and it paid off for me, right? They did turn the corner and ended up winning 9 conference games and getting to 500. And if they could have got one more game against Minnesota there in the Big Ten tourney, we might be talking about an NIT game on the next day or two, right? But it didn't happen. I do think that, you know, you have some pieces to build around, maybe not a full team, obviously, but you do have a system or approach that now you can apply. And I think with the transfer portal, I think they've proven that they can be aggressive with that and selective in getting players like Bannemill and Gary last year and guys in previous years. So if they feel like they've got the right formula now, right, mm-hmm. Let's go out and sell that. And I think with the 1890 now doing the NIL package mm-hmm. for basketball, there's no reason they can't get 3 or 4 contributors, right? You don't have to get the entire team like they have the first couple of years in the transfer portal.
We don't want that.
No, you just need a couple. And if someone like Chucky Hepburn is out there as a point guard, literally a ready-made starting point guard for you in the Big Ten, that could be pretty compelling. I think there's others, Isaac Trout at Virginia. I don't think it might not be at Virginia next year. I don't know about Hunter Salas. I mean, you go down the list. There's a lot of Nebraskans that have left that may be like, yeah, you know, playing time and a great opportunity, and they're gonna have 15,000 people there, and I can get them 10 or 11 wins opposed to 9 like last year. Sure. You know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I work hard on these questions on Twitter to phrase them in such a way that nobody can come back and give us too much crap, because we get the crap on the comments on YouTube and everything after the show. And so to your point, Dave, you know, you took a little credit for, you know, how Hoiberg did better, but we got some crap last week for still showing too much support to him.
We didn't
make the tournament. So, you know, there we are, just we're drinking Kool-Aid and supporting a team that didn't make it. But look, I mean, that first line is pretty simple there. Whether an NIT invite comes or not, there was no doubt progress was made on the court this season. No one can argue that. Now, whether there's enough progress to make everyone happy, that's a whole different thing. But there was progress when you sweep Iowa, and you beat Wisconsin, you beat Creighton on the road. There's progress. But, you know, next season for me, I get what you're saying there too, Dave, between the expectation of making the NCAA. Like if we had a season like Rutgers did, or if we had a season like Nebraska did in 2017, you go 22-11 and you just don't get the call. I'm not sure what more you can do. We're not UNC, who has the expectation of making the NCAA. Correct. So if they don't, they're going to turn down the NIT. I promise you, we won't turn down the NIT next season if it is offered.
Yeah.
Yep. I agree. I mean, I just feel like, I mean, I'll have the expectation that depending on who they get from the portal, I think I'll be looking to, hey, let's make the tournament next year, right? Mm-hmm. Will we get there or not? I don't know.
Well, Rob, I posted one other thing, and this does go to Rob because he responded to it.
Fire.
I was like, it was after the Purdue win yesterday. I just tweeted out, you know, hey, Hoiberg, all you need to do is just recruit a 7'4" center that can dominate on both sides of the court, and you're golden. So just do that. Just get that 7'4" dominant center. And Rob, you did respond that we were going after a 7'1" guy. So, you know, not quite 7'4", but
John Bull. I think we talked about him last week.
I would take a 6'10" guy that can.
But we haven't offered him yet, which is a little bit confusing to me. If you go down the list of his offers on like 24/7 and a couple other sites, because I've been kind of tracking that, we still haven't offered him, even though we made a visit. So, and was that an official visit or unofficial? I'm not quite sure.
I wouldn't worry about it too much. I mean, I think that's so much influx. I mean, there's going to be so many players entering the portal. We think the football transfer portal is crazy. I mean, it's just going to be nuts as these teams, you know, seasons end here. So,
yeah. Kevin's point right there was a good one. And Dave Fite, who's been on the show before with the Fan Forum, he wrote something today on SI that I thought was really good. And it was the same thing basically that Kevin's comment there was, which is, you know, Hoiberg's got to make the postseason next season. That's the non-negotiable. You can't be in year five and not making it. That has to happen, I think. And so whether it's the NIT or the NCAA, hopefully it's the NCAA, but we have to have some standards as a program. And it's been four long seasons, but this year you felt like we started to turn the corner. We did start to beat some teams that we hadn't been beating. I'm genuinely looking forward to it. I think we have enough pieces. Got to keep Lawrence. Got to keep Lawrence. You know, if they can get Tominaga back, that would be a huge plus.
Yep.
But you do start to have some pieces of the puzzle that you are returning. And that's something that we've been just missing. It seems like every other year we're constantly starting over. I don't feel that way next year.
Yep, fair enough. Yeah.
All right. And the last tweet of the week gets us into what will be our main discussion of the night, which is football and defense. But there was an article that was written by Brady Altman's in the Hail Varsity, and it was just about Tony White. It was about the defense and some of the things he's doing. It talked about the three defensive coaches that he's brought in, the new analysts and quality control guys. I wanted to read this here. While White didn't hire his position coaches, he brought in familiar analysts. Kevin McGarry is a senior defensive analyst at Nebraska following coaching stops with White at Syracuse and San Diego State. The two worked together at San Diego State for 9 years. McGarry has over 3 decades of experience in college coaching, mostly in various defensive roles. He's established in the coaching circles and has bona fides, and his bona fides were welcomed. White hired two young assistants in Josh Bringwell and Jack Potenza. Bringwell is a defensive analyst. After the two worked together in Syracuse, before that, Bringwell was a student assistant coach at San Diego State. Potenza served as a graduate assistant coach on White's defense at Syracuse. Potenza is a defensive quality control coach at Nebraska and will specialize on the line after 3 seasons at Syracuse. So as we go through this on the defense, they made a point last week to talk about, and we even have a video of Coach Rule talking about it. They made a point to say that these coaches haven't worked together. White didn't hire these defensive assistants, the actual assistant coaches, but that, you know, he was able to bring in these three guys that can help him with some of the transition. And I think that's a good place to start from.
It's time to throw the bones.
And we're throwing the bones here, where we're going to do our defensive breakdown for spring practice. Here's our coaching staff, Honky.
Yeah, so basically just kind of a piggyback off of what we just talked about there. Get my head away from the Herdat logo over me.
No, just keep it right over your head. It's fine.
Yeah, here we go. We'll just go like this here. So. Kind of like that, actually. At defense coordinator, we have Tony White. On the D-line, Terrence Knighton. linebackers, Rob Dvorak. Secondary is Evan Cooper. And then the three guys that we just talked about, Kevin McGrary is the senior defensive analyst. Josh Bringwell is the defensive quality control. And Jack Potenza is the other defensive quality control. And then we're also going to discuss special teams tonight. So we have Ed Foley there, the special teams coach, and Josh Martin is the special teams analyst. Just like last week, for anyone that's going to be listening here, watching it on YouTube, we'll divide this up into segments of just position. We'll also do one of all the position groups together, one big video of that. And the players that are listed, just to, I'm going to say it here, and I know we're still going to get responses on YouTube and Twitter and all that. We're only going over scholarship guys right now. That's because there's 100-plus scholarship players on the team. So that's more than enough to discuss. But, yes, we absolutely believe that there are going to be walk-ons that will play roles on this team, walk-ons that will find their way into scholarships once the season gets going. But for right now, for the purpose of what we're doing today, heading into spring ball next week, we're just looking at the scholarship players right now.
Boomer, did you get that? Hockey saying that Rule is cutting the walk-on program.
That's right.
Yep, that's what I took away from that.
Gone.
Yep.
Yep.
Completely gone. Yes. He's cutting tradition.
NFL-sized roster. That's what he wants.
So. Black shirts are gone. This is over.
We don't even need 85 scholarships. We don't need 53. We need to manage the roster.
And with that, we're going to go with defensive line here first to start off with. And just like last week, again, I'll read down from top to bottom, starting with the seniors. And Stephen Wynn Jr., senior, 6'3", 305, the transfer from a year ago from Alabama. Nash Hutmacher, junior, 6'4", 330. He's been in the program now for 4 or 5 years. Ty Robinson, another junior, 6'6", 310. Raquan Buckley, sophomore, 6'6", 290. Elijah Judy, a sophomore, 6'3", 300. He's the transfer from A&M this offseason. Vincent Carroll Jackson, freshman, 6'5", 270. Rob, you talked with him month and a half ago. He was on the Redcast. Sua Lafotu, freshman, 6'4", 300 from California. Cameron Lenhart, a freshman, 6'3", 245, and he's on campus right now. And then Riley Van Poppel, freshman, 6'5", 275 from Texas. So I guess I'll kind of start with you, Dave, as you see that list. I mean, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, Nash Hutmacher has been here long enough that you get his name right.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. Hut Nashmacher, yeah.
It looks a little thin, right? Especially with experience. You like Ty Robinson's been there for a while. I think Nash still has the potential, and we've seen him play more and more. Stephen Wynn with a full year in the system and with, offseason conditioning, et cetera, hopefully can play a larger role. I mean, I think they're high on Raquan Buckley. I think they aggressively went after Elijah Judy, so maybe they can make immediate contributions. I think the freshmen – I would think are probably freshmen that aren't going to see too much. So that really tells me that they're a little thin on depth and they still may go get another guy in the portal after spring ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The 3-3-5 that they're running, that will be interesting to see what they do. They always talk about how it's multiple and they can get into 4-man fronts and 3-man fronts. Mm-hmm. I would say the same thing this year that I said last offseason, which is that changes up what type of defensive line bodies you need. If you're in a 4-man front, you may need 2 big-bodied guys, and then your ends can be anything from a Cameron Lenhart size guy, or maybe some of the guys that we're going to show on the next slide, which is the edge players. Some of those guys might fill in at defensive ends if you're in a 4-3, but in a 3-man front, you're more likely going to need 3 of these big bodies out there. Stephen Wynn intrigues me because he's an example of a transfer that I wouldn't want to take this year in the same way. I wouldn't want to take a guy in May or June getting here. And that's what he came here last year. And I think it stunts the growth and the development a little bit. But he's been here now for a year. Now he'll go through the full off season. And I think we have a good opportunity to see what he can do, right from the start, right in game one. Hutmacher, like you said, he's been well-developed here. He's been here a long time. He's ready to play. And so is Robinson. Robinson's been playing a lot. So There's some experience there, and there's some size. I mean, you throw Judy in there, and he's a big dude. And Buckley, that's 5 guys that if they can pan out. I mean, you've got a little bit of depth going there, but you probably don't want to get too much deeper than that. You start getting into true freshmen on the D line in this conference, and that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, Rob.
Yeah, I was going to say that this is probably This D-line probably raised a lot more red flags for me than the offensive line in that, you know, there's only three carryovers from the previous administration, we'll call it, you know, and in the
four, Buckley was here.
Well, yeah, but he didn't see as much playing time.
No,
so, you know, and that's fully. And in the previous, I think in the previous like 5 years or something, there's really only like two like actual recruits from Frost that saw playing time. I think in Huttmacher and Robinson, I think it was. And then obviously Wynn was a transfer and Buckley, I think last year as a freshman, he didn't see a ton of playing time. And then,
no,
you know, and so you've got those guys. And then, you know, even then, they didn't have a lot of recruits in the pipeline. I think Van Poppel was the only one that they actually were able to retain from that class. And he called, I think I saw a story where he called Van Poppel within 4 hours of his hiring to make sure. And Van Poppel was all in. He fell in love with Lincoln, the school, the facilities. So for him, he just needed the reassurances from the coaches. And at that point, I think he committed right away.
Yeah.
I should point out too, that he is the son of first round Oakland A's draft pick of Todd Van Poppel, who was a pitcher for the A's for a while, who hopefully his son's career at Nebraska pans out a lot better than his major league career did before he went over to Texas.
Hey Boomer, did Todd Van Poppel play in the College World Series? Look that up.
I'd have to look that up. I don't know that off the top of my head.
I'm almost positive that Todd Van Poppel did. Maybe he was just a high draft pick, but
yeah,
he was.
I think it was a high school draft pick for, if I recall, but I probably wrong because baseball draft is so weird. But anyway, so, yeah, I mean, either way though, I think I agree with you, Dave. I think they're going to have to add a player or two out of the portal if they can get like a nice like 5-6-7 man rotation on that line. But again, with the 3-3-5 defense, you know, they may not need it as much based off of what they're doing and the other positions that we're looking at, like with safeties and linebackers. But at the same time, you know, it's an area where it's concerning. I won't lie. I mean, I'm over here drinking Kool-Aid and I'm still concerned about it.
Yeah. A couple of things, Honky, just on this. I mean, to your point of Stephen Wynn Jr. didn't have as big of an impact last year because he came in after spring ball. Anybody who's brought in, I don't know how big of an expectation we can have for him, but maybe just enough depth to get a six guy in there with some experience at the D1 level. And then obviously, that the walk-ons do play a part of this, right? I mean, they didn't cut the walk-on program, so there could be someone there in that pool. Maybe I'm even blanking on someone who probably played last year.
Well, Colton Feast is a good example.
Feast was, yeah. I was gonna say he's
right, but Colton's not back, right?
No, Feast and Drew both graduated, so they're done,
right? And so someone could emerge there, and we might even see that here in spring ball where one or two walk-ons, you know, get into a regular rotation, and we might feel better about this in a month, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is your scholarship, you know, group here, but where walk-ons can provide depth, there may be a transfer of a position guy too. There could be an O-lineman who switches the D-line.
Yep.
That rule does that. Rule's done that. So, you know, this is what we kind of know right now going into spring ball, but when we get to post-spring ball, we're going to do our depth chart like we did last year. That's a fun show, and we'll know a lot more hopefully by then, not just from what we've seen in the spring game itself, but also what we've heard from all the talk over the those 15 practices. So there's a lot that can happen between them. But to your point, Dave, if you're waiting till after the semester is done to bring in a couple more transfers so that we can fill out this room, I'm just already going to say that guy, whoever you bring in, better just be so ready made and you know, to play instantly, because we've seen it. Last year we brought in two guys. We brought in Wynn and then we brought in Drew from Texas Tech, and Drew had played 900 snaps in two seasons at Texas Tech. P5 football, a lot of snaps. Guy didn't get here till August, and that just it can't help but stunt the development of the player. And for what Coach Rule wants to be, which is a development program, and we've talked about this in previous shows, the marriage, so to speak, of being a development program in today's transfer portal world is you've got to get these guys in now to develop them.
Here's a question. Maybe Boomer will have a thought on this. What if someone like Tony White, the defensive coordinator, finds someone from Syracuse, right, that he is familiar with, has coached, knows the system, and is looking for maybe more playing time or just wants to move on? I mean, that might solve that transition problem, huh?
Yeah, it could, but of course that requires there to be someone from Syracuse who fits that role. I haven't looked at their roster lately, and I don't
know. Damn, Logic Boomer, come on, man.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, and if their starting D-line is suitable for the Big Ten and what they'll be going up against, I mean, I guess it's something we could look at here in a little while. But, yeah, it's hard to fill in those guys, you know, like Anki said, too late after the fact of just filling them in. I mean, I think a lot of times when you're going that late in the transfer portal, that's where you're just looking to add depth to have bodies at that point, just in case something happens, because you're not really expecting a ton out of anybody
that might happen.
You're getting that late. So,
you're just getting a grad transfer, a one and done that is just a stopgap measure. But I guess my thought with the Syracuse idea, I guess, is that Honky was making the case with Drew last year, someone who had 900 snaps underneath his belt at Texas Tech. I imagine his growth was stunted because he didn't know the system well enough, and he struggled understanding how to fit in, and he wasn't able to find the field nearly as much as you would hope. If someone knows Tony White's defense well enough that they can fit in, even if they are maybe a little undersized or not quite up to Big Ten standards, at least he knows the system and maybe can fill that depth, right?
And I suppose it also kind of depends what Tony White feels he can actually fully institute in year one, you know, with the players he's got. He may not be able to go all out and do exactly what he wants to do. He's going to have to kind of mesh the system for what they have. I mean, so, you know, is one player going to be the difference between, you know, the system he really wants and, you know, working with what we've got? I don't know. So that remains to be seen, I think. So it's definitely, the D-line is definitely a work in progress. So
two players from the spring bowl that I'm very interested in is the transfer Judy from Texas A&M. I mean, that's a big guy. That's a guy that, you know, the upside can be very up on him. So, I mean, he might be one of those dudes that is starting for you next year. You don't know. And he has the whole offseason to get there. And the other guy is Cameron Leonard, who is here early. So, you know, he was in the All-American games in high school. He was a high recruit. He's listed 6'3", 245. I don't know if that's his exact size right now. That's just what I saw listed. So, my guess is, you know, if he's going to be playing D-line, he's going to need to be a bit heavier than that. But, you know, this is it's a good starting point, I think. And then when you start to add in some of the walk-ons and we get the development going over the spring, it'll be fun to see where this D-line's at towards the end of it. So let's move on. And the next spot here, the edge, again, some of this sometimes I think these guys, there could be some overlap. There might be a time where an edge guy, a big edge guy, could line up as a D-end in a certain set or two. We saw that last year at times with a guy like O'Shawn or a guy like Garrett Nelson would have hand in the turf and down, but sometimes they'd be stand up as well. As we look at the edge roster here, we have MJ Sherman, a junior, 6'3", 250. He's a transfer from Georgia, one of the three that we've had. Chief Borders, a sophomore, 6'4", 240, transfer from Florida. Jamari Butler, sophomore, 6'5", 245, and he had went into the transfer portal, and he's one of the guys that took his name back out, and I'm glad he did. We could use the depth from him. I think he's been developed here the last couple of years. He's starting to get ready. I mean, you saw him last year on a few times on the field that he was there was a sparkle with him, and let's see what he can do here now going into year three. Blaze Gunnarsson, another big guy, 6'6", 250. So just looking at those top four guys there, everyone's between 240 and 250. They're all 6'3 to 6'6. There's some size there. Kai Whalen is a sophomore, 6'5", 235, and he's a junior college player that's come in here. Jake Applegate, redshirt freshman, 6'4", 220. And then the two true freshmen, Maverick Noonan, freshman, 6'3", 245, and Princewell Umanamalan, freshman, 6'4", 230. A lot of upside with a lot of these guys. But, you know, we'll start at the top there. Those are the guys that are really the ones that you're going to be expecting to play the biggest roles, those top four, and we'll kind of see where that goes. Dave?
Yeah, wow. I mean, a bunch of names that didn't play that much or weren't on the roster last year, right? I mean, with O'Shawn and et cetera, not here, Nelson. Tanner, so, I mean, Jamari Butler is the one name that sticks out, of someone who was really showing last year, and you're right, we're glad that he took his name out of that transfer portal. And, you know, Blaze Gunnarsson's been a name that, you know, highly recruited. Everybody was excited that we got him out of Iowa. and hasn't really shown much. But, I mean, he did start to play a little bit more last year as well, so he could make a big jump. I think this is where I would look at, even whether it's someone like Butler or Gunderson or some of these transfers who they brought in specifically is – but didn't play that much, you know, like Chief Porter's, for example, and saying, like, are they going to make a big jump because of the change in coach and philosophy and approach, all those type of things, right? Mm-hmm. You're looking for at least one or two of these guys to make a big jump because they just – there's not a lot of folks here that have had a lot of on-field production.
Yeah, and again, I'm going to say the same thing. I don't mean to be a broken record here, but, you know, we brought in Oshon last year, and Oshon was the top transfer of the transfer portal. But we got him in here in June. And so I don't know that we have a really good example yet defensively the last couple of years of the portal of somebody that came in and right away really mm-hmm. took over, as opposed to last week when we talked about wide receivers. The last couple of years between Samori Toure and Trey Palmer, we had guys that came in and they significant play time and they were your leading receivers that next season. But they also were here right now. They went through spring and they went through all the offseason parts. So, you know, when we talk about guys in the past, one difference, I don't know if MJ Sherman or Chief Borders, you know, is as talented or has the same skill set as what Oshon did coming in. But I know that they're going to be here now. And we get to see that. And we've heard Coach Rule talk multiple times about the importance of practice. It's the most important thing to him. And that's part of the development. I don't know how you can get better and get developed if you're not there at practice. And that's what all these guys that we're talking about, these transfers, they're all here right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And Boomer, I think Chief Borders will make a lot of the best names lists.
Yeah. I think so. That's an easy one. Yeah.
I mean, that's
another young room. I know we've talked about this and some of the other, you know, roster slots like we talked about last week too, but man, you've got one junior, no seniors. Whole bunch of sophomores and freshmen, so be interesting. Plenty of people to step up. So yeah.
You know, one advantage that they do have again with Borders and Sherman both being on campus right now too. You know, they just went through that whole 8-week program that, you know, weightlifting and training and everything leading up to spring, is that, you know, this is a whole new staff, this is a whole new system, and these guys are gonna be learning this together. So hopefully during this spring point, there's not going to be a bunch of guys that are feeling like they're left out, if that makes sense, like to where they're not going to be wondering where they are to fit in the system. They're actually going to be challenging each other to fit in the system. So maybe pushing themselves a little bit harder because there's nobody is guaranteed a spot at this point. Right. So everybody's still battling.
There's no establishment.
Yeah. So there's no real pecking order at this point. So these guys maybe will work a little bit harder knowing that like they have a chance to play if they can step up and do it. I mean, I'm looking for positives here, you know.
Yeah. I don't know if they're going to work harder, but to your point, Rob, there's clearly opportunity, right? There's playing time on the table, and someone's going to take it.
Yeah, well, someone has Fedoni, Fedoni said that last week at the presser where he's like, there are certain guys that, you know, feel like they have an opportunity now that they didn't feel before because maybe they were on the bad side of a coach or just felt like they had fallen down the depth chart and that was it for them. They were done. And now you have new sets of eyes on you and it's a new opportunity. And this happens. That's one of the benefits of a coaching change is it's an opportunity for guys that are to impress a new set of coaches. And so let's watch the video here. Speaking of coaches, let's watch the video of Rule talking about his new defensive coordinator and that staff that he's put together.
I think it shows a real strength of Tony that he would take a job as the coordinator and have the other three coaches all be not tied to him, but tied to me previously. But he's confident in who he is and in who his system is and brought in some great analysts. You know, Coach McGarry's been doing this a long time. He brought in two guys, Josh Bringell and Jack Potenza. I did not know them. I mean, the greatest compliment I can give both of them is if Tony left or I would hire them again. They're fantastic. And so, but it's been fun. I think it's going to be unique. And again, the most important thing to me is that they're watching the players and how they do things, right? Like, you know, are we a 4-3? Are we a 3-4? Are we a man team? Are we a zone team? His system has the flexibility to get to all that, but I need to see what – we have a lot of defensive backs. You know, I got to see what guys can do this spring and then really figure out, hey, this is the system that will give our guys the best chance.
You know, he says there, are we a 4-3 or a 3-4 team and everything. I keep – throwing that out, that 4-3 piece of this, because that might be how your numbers work out. If we go to a 4-3, we have more defensive linemen than if we're in a 3-4, in the sense that these edge players almost instantly turn into, at least a couple of them turn into defensive ends. I mean, that's just what happens in a 4-3. And so, you know, it wouldn't be unheard of to see Blaze Gunnarsson on the opposite side of Jamari Butler at D ends with two defensive tackles in the middle. And if that's the case, now that you go back and you look at the D line, if you're just trying to fill two spots of depth here in a 4-3, this looks a lot different all of a sudden. Now you could see where maybe you have two or three deep. And that gives you a little more hope there. If you're going straight 3-4 or 3-3 and you need three guys from that first slide on it, now you feel a little different about the depth. So that these position groups, they all kind of merge into each other a little bit. This front seven, the edge guys, some of these guys could be on the next slide with the linebackers, because there's talk of that, like how does Sherman or Borders, would one of them move into an inside linebacker spot? And one of the things I think is interesting, I'm going to have to reach back out to Brett Ciancio with Pick Six, is that when he's creating the book, if you remember last year, I brought that up to him about the 3-4 and the 4-3, and really it's just about the front seven. And he said he was going to look into switching the way he did his defense, that he might just call it front seven, or, you know, yeah, the front seven, instead of trying to break it down into D-line and linebackers, because there's so much overlap anymore with the way that teams do this, and guys are one play, their hands in the turf, the next one's up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's a really good point there, and you know, they definitely were high on some of these transfers, like Chief Borders and MJ Sherman. So, and clearly have the pedigree in the recruiting to show they should be able to play at the Power Five level. So, should be interesting.
Yep. Well, let's move on to the linebackers and all the people that are watching right now. It's great. We have a full room, it looks like. Keep putting in your comments here. We'd love to hear from you. Also, if you're watching this today, tomorrow, we'd love to get your comments as well. So put your comments down there and give us a like if you like this. Give us a thumbs up. Linebackers, starting with Luke Reimer, senior, 6'1", 225. Nick Henrich, junior, 6'3", 225. So there's a lot of experience with those top two guys. Nick Henrich is going to be out in spring, so he's nursing injuries. And even Reimer, I think, is still nursing some injuries as well from last year. So, but those two guys have a lot of snaps under their belt. So no concerns there from an experience standpoint. Garrett Snodgrass, junior, 6'3", 220. Micaiah Gabor, sophomore, 6'2", 220. Randolph Kapai, sophomore, 6'3", 205. Seth Malcolm, sophomore, 6'4", 215. And the two freshmen, Eric Fields, freshman, 6'2", 195. Dylan Rogers, freshman, 6'3", 240. One notable name here, and we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about it, but it's from your high school, Dave. We don't have Houseman anymore. And so Houseman, who had jumped ahead of a couple of these sophomores that are on this list, he jumped ahead of him last year, right away in his first year. He's transferred out and he's in Michigan now. And so that, you know, I'd love to put a lovely spin on that, but I really don't know how to. I mean, he was somebody that we didn't lose a lot of game changers, I didn't think, after the coaching change. He's the one guy I really wish that we'd have back. But this is what we have right now to work with going into spring. And there's a lot of experience and there's a lot of talent. And there's some young guys that give you some excitement, too.
Well, yeah, there's a good chance we'll see Houseman play in Lincoln this year.
Well, that's true.
Only way to have a positive spin is if this was the Go Big Blue Cast, right? I mean, literally, that's the only way to make this a positive. Switch, change the logos.
Yeah. Yeah. Quick. Yeah.
Where are Swobes when you need the guy, right? He's pretty quick. Yeah, at least these names are familiar, right? I mean, we do have a lot more familiarity with these guys, Reimer and Heinrich, to start off. Got to stay healthy. They've got issues with that. You know, Snodgrass, I feel like him and Nelson were up in the same recruiting class. Yes. It's just crazy that we just have not seen as much of Garrett Snodgrass. And hopefully that this year changes that. He could make a far more prominent role here for himself. And then there's some guys like Randolph Kapai, Seth Malcolm. We've also been waiting, two IO guys, right, that we really want to see to pop. So, yeah, I mean, I think you've got some established starters. Hopefully you see some guys rise up to challenge them, and we've should be okay here.
Yeah, Kapai's a South Dakota kid. He's from Sioux Falls. And then Malcolm, very close. And Malcolm's eight-man football from Iowa. So mm-hmm. you know, a small town kid there. But I mean, there's some talent in this room. And Snodgrass, he's a guy that intrigues me a little bit because I've brought him up in the past that, you know, if it didn't work with him at linebacker here, he'd be one of those guys. We talk about fullback. I wouldn't mind seeing, you know, if we need to build up a little bit of instant depth at that position, this is the time. Spring ball is the time when you do move some people around. But no doubt, I'm guessing he'll get his first shot here at linebacker and get his chance to impress because he's probably an example of somebody who had been here for 3 or 4 years, probably kind of lost the eye of the coaches because he was getting passed over. Well, here's his chance now with some new coaches to try to see his way onto the field, especially with Reimer and Henrich not taking as many snaps here in the spring.
Yeah, another bunch of guys healthy, you know, into the season. So,
Kapai is a guy that I think if you want to talk about the potential of the upside, it almost surprises me that either Houseman was that good, or I was kind of expecting Kapai to make the jump, and he was a year ahead of Houseman, so he'd have been in his second year last season.
Yeah,
I was kind of expecting him to do that. But look, I mean, if it takes him 3 years, if this year he plays at a level of what Houseman was playing a year ago, that would be a huge addition to this group. I mean, there's, and again, if you're playing a 4-3, if you're playing a 3-4, this changes how guys are lined up and everything too. So, alignment can change the look of this room quite a bit too, depending on where guys are playing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, with the Houseman loss, I mean, I think you mentioned Mathis. He was the number one person in the transfer role, like post spring, though, right? It wasn't like actually like back in like December. That's what Houseman was. He was like one or two in the portal, like when everybody was in, right? And so that's how much his recruiting profile changed in 1 year playing at Nebraska, but. To your point, I mean, I think these guys have the maturity and potentially some, at least the practice experience that they could flash in the same way.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's move into the secondary. And this, there's so many people, and you heard Coach Rule talk about it in that video. There are so many people right now in the secondary that we have to split this into position groups. And we'll start with the cornerbacks here. And I think we counted up, there was 12 listed. Tommy Hill. We had him listed last week as wide receiver, and we even said on the show, we go, we think we screwed up. We think he's a defensive back, and we just had him erroneously listed there, and that we still got comments from people, which basically just tells me people don't watch this. They see one thing, and then they just start commenting. It's like, good grief. I typed it out.
Everybody's watching this right now. Remember, Honky said that Rule's nixing the walk-on program.
There you go. Yep. Tommy Hill. Is listed as a corner here. Now as I say that, I went to the Huskers website today, and he is still listed as a wide receiver on their roster on the website. But again, this is pre-spring stuff, so don't get too worked up one way or the other. He might be a DB. He might be on the offense. Who knows? But we start from the top. Omar Brown, senior, 6'1", 195. He was the transfer from a year ago from Northern Iowa. Braxton Clark, senior, 6'4", 195. He's going into his 13th year at Nebraska. Tyreek Johnson, senior, 6'1", 180. He was the transfer from the five-star transfer from Ohio State a couple of seasons ago. Really, we haven't seen much from him.
He stuck around.
I mean, I'm, to be quite honest, I'm surprised that he is still on this list just because of how little we've seen from him. But who knows? Maybe, again, getting seen by a new coaching staff. Maybe – this is the you know, there was talent in him to make him a five-star at one time and to be recruited by Ohio State. We'll see what happens. Quentin Newsom, that dude's been – he's been solid. Senior, 6'1", 180.
Yep.
And now we get to the juniors, Tommy Hill. He was the transfer a year ago from Arizona, 6 foot, 200. Javier Morton, junior, 6'2", 195. Malcolm Hartzog came on big time last year as a true freshman. Real shocker, too. Sophomore, 5'9", 170. Taman Lynam. Sophomore 6'2", 180. And then we get to the freshmen, DeAndre Barnes, freshman 6 feet, 175. He was the one from Colorado that I think Satterfield talked to, you know, gave the story about how he was just driving by the school and stopped by and said hi to the head coach. And that's how we made the connection to get him. Weren't even recruiting him at the time. Dwight Boodle, the second freshman, 5'10", 170. He's been committed to us for 13 years. He's the younger brother of DiCaprio. And then Ethan Nation, freshman, 5'10", 160. He committed to us at the All-Star game, one of those hat ceremonies. And then I hope I say this right, Sincere Saifula, freshman, 6'2", 170.
Saifula.
So that's a big group there, Dave.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've got multiple spots there where you've got guys who have played a lot and even started, right? Braxton Clark, Quentin Newsom, Tommy Hill, and Hartzog probably have all started, I guess. I mean, maybe Hartzog didn't start last year, but he played a lot.
Yeah, he had some great interceptions last year. And
And then you throw in someone like Omar Brown, who's playing. Yeah, I mean, you got a lot of depth here and a lot of names. Yep.
Yeah.
Names and size. I mean, you've got Hartzog's a 5'9 corner, and you've got Braxton Clark out there at 6'4. So there's a lot of different body types there. I mean, this is a lot of names. I'm just going to go back to what Coach Rule said in that video clip. There's a lot of dudes in the secondary here. I've never seen 12 scholarship cornerbacks. So one thing,
and this is where you think a few people transfer out, right, by the end of spring ball or over summer, mm-hmm. right? Jeez.
Well, that,
you would assume
there'd
be some attrition, right?
Yeah, I mean, you would think some attrition, or is there ways to move guys around a little bit? Is there, you know, is one of these corners, could they play safety? Could a safety move up to outside linebacker, you know, in a role? Or could somebody switch over to the offensive side like Tommy Hill? And the other thing is, at the very end of this discussion tonight, we're going to talk about special teams. There could be places for these guys to fall into those roles too. To me, it all starts with Quentin Newsom. I mean, that's your stud guy returning. He's the guy that's going to be the lockdown corner, hopefully, on day one. I don't feel like we never really got to see Omar Brown last year. There was some hype of him last offseason. He was here during spring ball, but I think some injuries and just didn't see him, you know, get to play as much last year. And so that's someone I'm really interested in. I still like Clark. I mean, Clark has been, I have these visions. I'm an old guy, so I have these visions of like when Michael Booker was out there, big, long, you know, long armed corner that, you know, could drape a guy and just, you know, cover the tall receivers that you're going against, you know, at 6'4". I mean, that's a different type of body style. And he's got quite a bit of practice under him, quite a bit of play time. So, yep. You know, if he can get out there, I think Hartzog, you know, Newsom, that's a solid starting three and kind of fill in around that.
Yeah, and Tommy Hill has got experience there too, right? I mean, struggled a little bit at times, but also can make plays. So, I think you should be able to find two starters plus two backups out of this group, no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's go to safeties. There's nine of them. Marquise Buford, junior, 5'11", 190. Miles Farmer, junior, 6'3", 200.
He's a junior.
He's been here for 13 years as well. Noah Pola-Gates, junior, 6'1", 180. Deshaun Singleton, he was a junior college transfer a year ago, I believe, 6'3", 205. Kobe Bretz, the sophomore from Omaha Westside, 6'2", 210. Corey Collier, the sophomore, the transfer from Florida, 6'1", 180. Kane Williams, sophomore, 6'2", 200. Jaleel Martin, redshirt freshman, 6'2", 200. And then Ramir Stewart, freshman, 6 feet, 195. Yeah, like, go back to Miles Farmer there for a second. I mean, one of my memories, Dave, I'm going out to Denver this week to see you, but I remember being out there during the COVID year when we played Northwestern in the whatever that third week of the season one was. And that was one of the first times, a young Farmer got out there on the field, and he had two interceptions in that game. But that was 2020. You know,
so, that year didn't count.
Yeah. So here we are, you know, this is he's still a junior and he brings good size to the safety room. I certainly see him getting a lot of the playtime and Buford as well. I mean, those two guys, but you know, is this a year where can Pola-Gates, you know, we mentioned guys like Snodgrass and some guys that have been on the team for a few years and just maybe need a new set of eyes looking at him. Pola-Gates, I mean, came here with all of the accolades. He was in the Polynesian Bowl and, you know, four-star big-time recruit. And we just haven't seen it quite on the field. So whether that's in special teams or can he actually start to get out there, if we're running a 3-3-5, you know, a nickelback, you know, are we going to get into some of those five defensive backs, six defensive back situations? You know, can he get his way on the field that way?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, remind me, so Kane Williams was one of the transfers from Alabama, is that right?
Yeah, why am I drawing a blank on that?
And did he transfer in for this class, or was he last year? I mean, we've got so many new names, you know, and we've got a couple familiar ones here, but him and Corey Collier, I'm trying to picture on when we get those guys transferred in.
Kane Williams came
from Florida.
Yeah, he came from Alabama, and in 2022, he did not play. He was a redshirt freshman.
Okay, so that was from last year's coaching staff. And Corey Collier is this year's coaching staff and from Florida.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we have three.
Collier's an interesting guy, too, because I think Rule was actually recruiting him in high school back in, like, 2019. Which, you know, before he went over to the Panthers. So then like as soon as he entered the transfer portal, he was like a Husker almost immediately. So that's we got a bunch of offers, that's interesting because he's a sophomore, but I also wouldn't be surprised if we saw him get playing time because he's a guy that Rule's been watching for a long time, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, a guy that I'm keeping my eye on, and I'm a big in-state kid, Kobe Bretz. Omaha West Side, and you know he was there the same year when, and I've already, my brain is going blank, the guy that went to Oregon from Omaha West Side, the defensive back.
Dickerson,
yeah, Avante Dickerson. He was the big four-star kid. Well, that same year that we didn't get Dickerson, we got Bretz out of the same secondary. But Bretz comes with some more size. Obviously, he's playing safety. And, you know, a bigger kid like that, I mean, it'll be interesting to see him if he gets some play time out there, especially in those early games. Against Northern Illinois, against Louisiana Tech. If we can get some of these guys out there, there's opportunities, I think, for some of those young guys to get a few snaps. But, again, if it's not on defense, it's going to be special teams. How do they get some of these young guys onto the field early? I think you're going to see it there with special teams.
Yep, makes sense.
And, heck, maybe some of them can play basketball.
Well.
Oh, boy.
Well, let's get to special teams. We've talked enough about
that. There's Boomer's slide right here.
Boomer, here's your slide. Now, the reality is this slide looks light on names because we're only talking about the specialists that would be on it. But literally what we just went through, all these previous slides, like we said, how many countless number of those guys are going to find their way on the punt teams and kickoff returns. And some of those DBs are going to be returning kicks and returning punts, you know, so that's an opportunity. But specifically to this right now, this roster, these are the four guys that are specialists. And we have Marco Ortiz, senior deep snapper, transfer from Florida. Timmy Bleakroad is the junior kicker. So he came here last season. Brian Buscini, junior punter. He was from Montana a year ago. And then Tristan Alvano, the true freshman kicker from Omaha West Side. Normally, as they said, they wouldn't normally have two kickers on scholarship at the same time. But Alvano is potentially a generational, once-in-a-generation kind of in-state kicker for sure. He was just outstanding at Westside. And to me, he was a non-negotiable. You had to go out and get him, so I'm glad that they did.
Yeah, and I you can't really have any complaints with the specialists that we have here. I mean, you got a couple with experience, which is good. You know, Alvano, like you said, has all the potential in the world as that home state kid, so, you know, politically, you had to give him that offer. And then, and you mentioned it, just this is a place for opportunities for lots of people to get playing time. Now, you know, we've heard it spoken of already. You know, we've flogged that Nequoddick Equine many times about how important special teams is when it comes to needing game-changing plays. And, you know, Rule and Foley have talked about that. That's something big they're really focusing on this year. Because our special teams efficiency has been crap, you know, in terms of, especially return game. It's been awful for years. And I think, you know, you'll see guys work themselves into it, but I think you'll see guys, a good chance of players like Billy Kemp who've returned, you know, punts in the past.
Yeah.
I think you're likely to see him probably starting the season. And it's a good spot for Tommy Hill to maybe, you know, get some kickoff returns. And, yeah, we've got a lot of running backs still on the roster. You know, it's an opportunity for some of them to, you know, fill in those spots too. So, but yeah, it's going to be an opportunity for people who really want to go out and make a name for themselves. We've got some experience on the return game, and for the love of God, if you could just not have to fair catch every one of them and just go forward for a few yards, that'll be a nice positive for the season.
Yeah. Well, one other thing I want to highlight, I'm going to go back for a second to the coaching staff. You know, there was a season not too long ago where that special teams analyst was what we had, and that was it. And here we have Ed Foley, who's, you know, quickly ingratiating himself to Husker Nation. People like him a lot here. He's a, you know, kind of a boisterous guy, and he's been around going to all these different schools.
He fits in well.
He fits in really well. So he's our special teams coordinator, but we also have Josh Martin, a special teams analyst. So there's definitely more. You would definitely look at this and say that there is more of an emphasis being put, at least from just a bodies getting guys out there. You know, Boomer, go back to, you've talked about this before. It starts with the emphasis in practice on this. Mm-hmm. What do you put onto it? And having two guys dedicated to that, and then what Coach Rule's talked about that. I mean, what does that make you feel going into spring ball that that they're going to take this serious and really treat this like the third element of the football team?
Yeah, I think we've seen it from prior regimes, you know, without naming names, that, you know, I think they've said they pay attention to it, but clearly the results showed they weren't, or they certainly weren't giving it the focus they...
It was hard to hide at times, that's for sure.
It was, yeah, very much so. And that's been the case for a while, it seems here. And again, you know, we mentioned before, special teams isn't the sexy thing people like to talk about. You know, no one loves talking special teams. You know, punting, punt returns, things like that. But
no, you do. You love talking. I do,
yeah, because it's a huge part of the game, and it's forgotten and misunderstood and underappreciated. And, you know, when it works, that, you know, when you don't have to talk about it, that's great because it's working, you know, and that's mm-hmm. what, that's what you want it to be, you know.
Boomer, remind me, yeah. Bleak Road was kicking for us last year. Who else was also a place kicker? Did we have somebody, a kickoff specialist? Why am I thinking there's one other name that?
Yeah, gosh. Was somebody else kicking last year?
Bunch of walk-ons.
Yeah, we had people all over the place, yeah.
But Bleak Road is established, but we got a comment there from our friend of the show, Eric Francis, I think, saying that, you know, he thinks Alvano is going to win the starting job by August. That should be interesting.
Yeah, it'll be a good opportunity, I think, for both of them to see what they can do. And Tally, if you're kicking them out of the end zone every kickoff, that's what you want. You give that person the job.
So. You know, I'll make a comparison. It's a weird comparison, but I'm going to make one. We talked about Hoiberg earlier, and that this season, you know, it hasn't been a success. We didn't get it to the postseason, but it was better. At least it was better than what we'd seen in previous years. Last year's special teams, there's still some bad memories of onside kicks and some weird things. But for the most part, I mean, if you had to grade it compared to some of the absolute disasters that we had in the years prior, we at least started to make a 30-yard field goal again. You know, we started to do some fairly normal things. And really, Buscini, of all the guys, I mean, that's really important to have him back. I mean, he changed the field for us. And he was punting like a Big Ten punter was last year. And that was instantaneously noticeable on the field and mm-hmm. played a big role for us. So I see a lot of benefit there. The Marco Ortiz one is interesting to me, the deep snapper. Just because, again, sitting at 100-plus scholarships, in a very traditional sense, I usually think of deep snappers could probably come out of your walk-on program after a couple of years, but at least right away in year one, they want to make sure they have somebody that they, you know, can count on right away. And we lost our deep snapper from a year ago, so, all right, that, you know, they offered the scholarship right away for it. But, it was better last season than it had been prior.
Yeah, the dumpster fire wasn't smoldering quite as much. So,
it's like one of those tire fires that just, like, just really hard to get out. So it's a little.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. But, Dave, to answer your question, too, yes, we did have a kickoff specialist last year. And, in fact, I had him on the show last summer, Brendan Frankie. Yeah,
that's right.
Gretna graduate, Morningside University transfer. Only 15 kickoffs were returned last year for an average of 18 yards, which is really good. It was best for like ninth in the country, I think, overall.
Okay.
So that Bleak was actually wasn't a shining doing that point of our Huskers last year.
Yeah. Thanks, Rob. I mean, yeah. Bleak Road wasn't doing that. So it'll be interesting to see who, if anything, is our kickoff guy compared to our place kicker. And for the deep snapper, Marco Ortiz, if you're listening to the show right now, if we have to say your name at any point the rest of the year, that's a bad sign. We don't want to mention your name, Marco. Do your job, and we'll be very happy.
No offense, Marco.
You did it the spring game or something. You know, maybe
he you want to come on the show, sure.
Yeah. If we have him on the spring game, if he does a really good job, it's something we notice how well it's being a deep snapper is, you know, like whatever. We can bring it up. Well, but
speaking of deep snapper, Damian Jackson, the former Husker who the Navy SEAL that he went to Buffalo last year, and now he's actually working out. I think I read that he was working out even in Nebraska this offseason trying to get into the pros to be a deep snapper. He's 30 years old. But if you can, I mean, that's a skill. If you've got it, you could, you know, make a decent little career out of that.
If he makes the NFL, there's already an option for his movie.
Yeah. Well, okay.
I turn 49 next week, and I'm actually thinking about trying out as like a water specialist for the Huskers.
Husker fans, you know, Redcasters watching this, you know, like I said, give us a thumbs up for what you've seen here if you like it, and leave a comment for us. Tell us where you think we got it right. Tell us where you think we got it wrong. Try to be polite. I mean, you know, come on, use your manners. But, you know, I think for the most part, this at least gives you a good idea. We're not trying to predict depth charts yet or anything like that. I mean, my goodness, we haven't seen these guys play, and the coaches haven't either. But we want to at least give an idea going into spring ball. And that's what this was about. We'll put a link in the show here as well to last week's show where we did this with the offense. So, you know, we're just trying to go through position groups, say who the names are that are scholarship guys. We hope that we see a lot of walk-ons, you know, make names for themselves too. I'm a big walk-on proponent, but this gives you an idea of some of those 103 or 104 scholarship guys that we have. Just a crazy number of guys for Coach Rhule and staff to go through in their first spring.
I can't wait. It's going to be a great spring game. I cannot wait to see some real football on April 22nd. And we're actually going to have the whole Redcast out there too, I think. Dave and I
I'm
talking today. We'll see. I'm hoping you are too, because I'd love some company on that drive. And, you know, otherwise I'm flying.
All right. Sounds good.
And now, Around the Van Horn.
All right, Hockey. I don't know if a Around the Van Horn is fully necessary. I'll just have the fun with the graphic. We did take two more wins this week from the Redbirds of Illinois State, but Sunday was canceled due to weather. And then in an odd decision, they are playing three games this week at Kansas State, but against Nichols. Is that right, Nichols State?
Yes. Yeah,
which is from Texas.
For the weather, they moved us south to K-State, and then I looked at the forecast for Manhattan, and it was like 5 degrees warmer than here. But
I was expecting like, they're expecting rain in Lincoln and not in Manhattan or something like that. But no, it's all about the same, and it's all you know, cold. So I guess the 5 degrees was enough for them to justify losing, you know, all the revenue from tickets. I don't quite get it. I don't, be honest with you, I don't get it. Maybe Nichols asked for it. I don't know.
It makes about as much sense to me as the NCAA playing baseball in February to begin with. I mean,
it's March.
This is the challenge. I know it's March now, but even shows you how much it makes sense to be playing baseball even now. I mean, I would argue, and this actually is a discussion that we had a little bit earlier, so this is fun, is that San Diego game, series where we go 0-3-1, and now our RPI is starting to drop, and we've had some text messages about that. You know, is that good, bad, whatever. We've been winning games, but our RPI is dropping. And like you've said a couple times, Dave, like the RPI just doesn't mean anything right now. It's going to change so much. And, you know, Vanderbilt, we've gone down a little bit, I think, since we beat Vanderbilt even. But San Diego's lost a bunch of games. But what it really highlights to me is, like, they should just flat out, when you're a northern team like us, they should just give you the first weekend or two just as exhibition. It's unbelievable, like, how different this team, you know, can be. I mean, that was a month ago that we played San Diego, and we look completely different already.
Hey, they're 9-1 in their last 10 games, which is fantastic. And their only loss is the defending College World Series champion. So, I mean, there's a lot of good things going on with this baseball team. I was a little skeptical of that San Diego series, thinking, oh God, here we go again, because the pitching was supposed to be, and the pitching's been great. I have to tell you, I think out of those 10 games, I think 7 or 8 of them have actually been considered what they call quality starts. So, There's been some shutouts, like, for the starters through like 6 or 7 innings, which the fact that they're going 6 or 7 innings, saving a lot of arms for the bullpen for later on in the season. So this, I if you're not watching Husker fans, like, right now, this baseball team has a lot going on, and their offense is on fire. Like, they are putting up runs. So even if they lose a game, it's going to be like 15-14. It's you know, because they're putting up, I think, somewhere around like an average of 9 or 10 runs a game right now. So they are killing it, and they are worth watching. And if you can go see them at Haymarket, I'm bummed. This is the first year I come out for the spring game that they're not playing at the Haymarket that weekend. So that's kind of a bummer. But I think maybe we'll try to check out a softball game or something if we can. So support women's sports. But,
yep.
yeah, it's an exciting team to watch, and it'll be interesting to see how well they do, because the only team in the Big Ten that's ranked right now is Iowa, and we all know how we've been playing against Iowa lately, so hopefully we'll be able to win some against them.
There's plenty of Big Ten teams there that are probably will be worthy opponents. And, you know, I mean, San Diego, I am surprised that they have gone on a losing streak here, but, I mean, I'm just looking at their schedule. You know, they lost to UC Irvine, which is a solid program. Got swept at Oregon, which is an RPI of 24, but Oregon's usually good. Oregon State's very good, and they lost to them. They did get one game at a ranked TCU. So, I mean, it's not like San Diego's losing to, you know, San Bernardino State.
Is it Maryland is the other team in the Big Ten, too, that's really – is it Maryland or Rutgers? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, I would not put barely anything. Rutgers has got a decent RPI. Maryland's
no, I'm not talking RPI. I'm talking that, like, has a returning All-American, and then they've also got a really good
– Maryland's the one, yeah.
Maryland, yeah. And so that'll be an interesting – I mean – you know, the Big Ten might be a little better this year than maybe some years that they don't get.
I don't think we've been bad in the Big Ten. I think we've been averaging. I mean, we're maybe only had what two or three last year, but typically we're getting three or four teams in. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think that could be this could be one of those years too. So we'll see.
Yep, a lot of early quality wins.
Yep, absolutely. All right, we're ready for some parting shots, guys.
Let's do it.
Honky, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, well, I was just actually reading through some of the comments. I usually don't get a chance to do that as much, but we had one from Eric Francis, of course, and he was on last week with Rob, and he goes, are you going to do the cast from the spring game? Ken said Honky's going to be on the podcast the day after. Does that count? So, yeah, I'll be doing Ken with Generation Red has just an outstanding home studio that he just built. So new house, new studio, looks outstanding, has some great colors in it. Now, speaking of that, Eric has been helping me a little bit with kind of the video, the quality down here. And so I've changed up some of the lighting, and then I think I'm even going to do some red lighting behind me. So this will kind of change that, but
you have some studio lighting on your, I mean, your face is glowing tonight. Well,
I've been doing that. And Dave, I got to tell you, I'm sure Eric is looking at your screen. He sees like these lights and
I know that. I hate being in this room, but it has better acoustics in the other room. So,
yeah. Yeah. So yeah, we sometimes forget that, you know, we're just like dudes doing a show.
I have aloe fiber, so my video is coming through extra clear because aloe fiber is probably the greatest internet in the history of the world. Aloe, if you're listening, let's talk.
They're not paying us yet, Rob.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
All right, Honky, is there anything else?
No, that would be it.
All right, Rob.
I mean, I got nothing, man. I think I'm... I'm looking forward to seeing Honky and you down in Denver. I think Skip's going to come out with us on what is that, Friday? I think he said he was. Your old college buddy Gary is going to be out as well.
Oh,
so
it's gonna be
a blast. Yeah, I just texted and let my son's mom know that he can stay there at her house Friday night, and I'll just come get him on Saturday. So I mean, anything can happen.
St. Patty's Day. This is. If this is our last RedCast, you understand.
My liver is scared already.
I've been trying to prepare here. I've been drinking red beer tonight.
I'm drinking Kool-Aid.
All right, Boomer, please help me out of here.
Well, not sure I can, but we all know it's the launch of spring football. And by football, I mean this Thursday, we see the start of the AFL season. So hope you're all excited. Have your teams ready to go, and you'll join us at 3:20 in the morning for the kickoff for Richmond and Carleton. So bright and early. So we'll be there. So
absolutely. All right, guys. Great stuff. Good show. Looking forward to Honky's annual March Madness trip. For now, let's call that a Go Big Red cast.
Go Big Red.
GBR.
Heard at Sports Network production.